Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a board member for Pardes. First, some news on what is happening at Pardes while Israel is at war. The following is from a letter written by Rabbi Daniel Landis, the director and Rosh Yeshiva of Pardes. We know that you're very concerned about the situation in Israel and about Pardes. As a community, we are doing what we can to remain focused on Torah learning. The July summer session was our largest ever with 115 students, and we just said goodbye to our wonderful executive seminar with over 25 participants. Morale at Pardes is high, learning is intense, and students are kept abreast of the news through special meetings we have with them. In addition to monitoring the news, we are in continuous contact with the Jewish Agency security team, which advises programs with foreign students. We believe that Pardes plays a crucial role in binding the best of diaspora young adults with Israel. This bringing together is crucial for the long-term health of our people as a real demonstration of solidarity and empathy and as a contribution to security in showing that we are one. That was from a recent letter by Rabbi Landis. In this year, Rabbi Schweiger discusses the Torah portion of Devarim. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Today we'll be looking at Parshat Dvarim, the beginning of the last book of the Chumash. Parshat Dvarim is different than the other four books, in that Parshat Dvarim is basically the parting speech of Moshe to the people before he dies. We're told in chapter 1, verse 3, in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, Moshe spoke to the people all that God had commanded him to them. This is happening 37 days before Moshe dies. The whole book is the legacy which Moshe gives to the Jewish people. Parshat Dvarim always falls the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. And the classic explanation is that in chapter 1, verse 12, we read, Echa esa levadi, how will I bear alone torchachem umasachem v'rivchem, your troubles, your burdens, your quarrels. And in fact, this verse is traditionally recited to the tune of Lamentations, which also begins with the word Echa. Echa yashva vadad. How did the city of Jerusalem dwell alone? Lamentations, which we recite on the night of Tisha B'Av. What I would like to examine is perhaps a deeper understanding of why this is parsha is always read before Tisha B'Av, and what is the central theme of the parsha. When we continue in chapter 1, we see that the first thing which Moshe chooses to recall as he's recapping 40 years of his leadership of the Jewish people, he doesn't talk to them about the Exodus. He doesn't talk to them about the splitting of the Red Sea. He does not discuss with them the revelation at Sinai. All of those will come up in later parshiot. Instead, the first thing which Moshe chooses to recall is the story of the spies. And it seems to be that this is central to the message that Moshe wants to convey to the people throughout this book. And that is, God is interested in having you take possession of the land of Israel. The land of Israel is the land of your destiny. You had an opportunity 40 years ago, and you missed it. You now have a second chance. This time, make sure that you take possession of the land and sustain your presence there. The connection between the Jewish people and the land of Israel . The vision of the Jewish people, the sense that this is the land of their destiny, Moshe feels is the most important message which the people need to hear. In the course of getting this message across, Moshe hits on another theme which is connected. And that is what I would like to look at in today's discussion. And it starts with chapter 2. In chapter 2, verse 1, Moshe says, "Vateshvu v'kadesh yamim rabim kayamim asher yishavtem." And you settled in Kadesh for many days, according to the days that you settled. This verse is in the aftermath of the spies. When God has told the Jewish people that they will have to remain in the desert, that a whole generation will have to die in the desert, until a new generation arises to be able to go into the land. According to the rabbinic understanding, the Jews actually settled in the area of Kadesh for a period of 19 years, corresponding to the 19 years which they spent in all the other journeys they made in the desert. And so when we read on, in chapter 2, verse 3, when God says to Moshe, "Rav lachem sov tahar hazeh, pnu lachem tzafona," enough. Now it's time for you to start turning northward. We are told of what happens in the 40th year, just a few months earlier than this day when Moshe is speaking to the people. As the Jews begin their journey northward on the eastern side of the Jordan, poised to enter the land of Israel. And it seems that we have a recap of what's mentioned in Numbers, in chapter 20 and 21. But in fact, in Deuteronomy, we're given a different angle on that story. And so we're told, in chapter 2, verse 4, the first people that the Jews encounter as they travel northward are the descendants of Esav, who live in the area of Seir, which is currently the area between Saudi Arabia and Jordan. And God says to the Jewish people, you are approaching their border in verse 4. They are very afraid of you. Beware. Do not provoke them. And what's important is in verse 5, Do not provoke them, because I will not give you their land. Not a foothold, not a footstep. Because this is the inheritance of Esav, whom I have given the mountain of Seir. And as we know, in the story as it happened in the book of Numbers, when the Jewish people approached the border and they asked for rite of passage, the people of Edom refused, and not only refused, but amassed an army on the border. And the Jews backed down. The Jews do not fight them. The Jews simply turn and go further north. And so we come back to our parasha, chapter 2, verse 9. And it says, "And we turned and we crossed by way of the desert of Moab." And once again, God says, "Do not distress Moab, do not provoke them. I will not give you their land as an inheritance, because I have given it to the sons of Lot to be their inheritance." We are actually not told about this in the book of Numbers. Similarly, when the Jews circumvent the land of Moab, the next place where they come to is in chapter 2, verse 19. They come by the borders of the people of Ammon. And once again, God says, "Do not distress them. Do not provoke them. I will not give you their land as an inheritance, because I have given it to the sons of Lot to be their inheritance." This story as well does not appear in the book of Numbers. When we look a few verses down, in verse 24, then we recall a familiar story where God says to the Jewish people, "You are approaching the border of Sihon, the king of Heshbon." And in fact, his land you will take possession of. You do have the right to engage him in battle. And so we're told in the continuation of this chapter of how the Jews engage Sihon in battle and take possession of his land. Very similar to what we're told in chapter 21 in Numbers. And then in chapter 3 in Dvarim, we're told of another king, Og, the king of Bashan, who the Jews also engage in battle and whose land they also take possession of. What I'm interested in looking at are a few details that appear in chapter 2, which are fascinating. Let's backtrack. When God tells Moshe, "I am not going to give you the land of Moab, because I have given it to the children of Lot," in chapter 2, verse 10, God says to Moshe, "Ha'emim lefanim yashvuva." Once upon a time, there was a people called the Emim who lived there. "Am gadol v'rav v'ram ka'anakim." A people who were numerous and mighty and lofty like giants. "Rifa'im yechashvu avhem ka'anakim." And there were this people of Rifa'im, who also were like giants. And the Moavim called them Emim. So that God is telling us who lived there once upon a time. this powerful people, a people of giants, a mythic people. And in fact, we're told in the next verse, who lived in the area of Seir, the land that was given to the descendants of Esav? Well, there were people called the Chorim. But the children of Esav defeated them, destroyed them, and took possession of their land in their stead. And then when we read on, we're told of what had been previously in the land of Ammon. In verse 20, that also was a land of Rephaim. But the Ammonim called them Zamzumim. And in verse 21 it says, but God destroyed them before the people of Ammon, and he enabled them to dispossess them and to take possession of their land. And in verse 22 it says, in the same manner that God behaved towards the children of Esav, who were in Seir, that's what God did to the people of Ammon. These details are making a very important point, which has to do with the role that God plays in history. And it's emphasizing to the Jewish people that there is a divine plan of history. The divine plan created a situation where the people of Seir were dispossessed and their land was taken over by the people, by the children of Esav. In a similar way, the areas of Ammon and Moab were once inhabited by giants, and that land too was given over to the people of Ammon and Moab by God. They were empowered to dispossess those giants. On the one hand, one can say that the reason why Moshe is making these points now to the Jewish people is a way of rallying them, especially in light of the demoralization that happened during the report of the spies. When the spies came back, the Jewish people were overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed to hear that the land of Israel was inhabited by a place of giants, of powerful nations. They saw themselves as being grasshoppers, and as a result, missed the opportunity to go ahead and take possession of the land. Now they're being given a second chance. Moshe doesn't want this to be a second lost opportunity. And therefore, what Moshe does is to try to prep them up. Realize the other peoples in this area also took possession of the lands of giants. And what enabled them to do that was because God was interested, as part of his divine plan. And therefore, in the same way they took possession of their lands, you will be able to take possession of your land. I would like to point out that chapter 2 in Dvarim makes reference to a story that appears in chapter 14 in Bereishit. In Bereishit, we're told of the battles between a coalition of four kings against a coalition of five kings. The five kings are a confederation of the cities of stone. The four kings are coming from the area which is modern-day Iraq, Iran. In the midst of these battles, Lot is taken captive, and Avraham goes and engages the victors, the four kings, in battle, thoroughly defeats them, and basically restores Lot and the kingdom of Sodom. What's fascinating is that in that section of chapter 14, as the battles are going on between the four kings and the five kings, we're told of all kinds of details which seem to be irrelevant to the story, are parenthetical. If we just turn for one moment, in chapter 14, verse 5, it speaks of how the four kings, before they finally encounter the five kings, engage all these other kings in battle. And so we're told that on the way, it says, Vayaku et Rifaim ba'ashtarot karnayim. They defeated the Rifaim in Ashtarot Karnayim, and the Zuzim, and the Emim. And then in verse 6, and the Chori in Seir. Very interesting. Who are mentioned? Rifaim, Emim, Chori, Zuzim. All of those peoples are mentioned in our verses that I read. Zuzim are not mentioned by us. Instead, we have something that sounds like it, Zamzumim. So what does that say? The way that I understand it is, there is a battle which takes place in the time of Abraham, which is part of a global war between a confederation of four kings and five kings, which at the time shows us how powerful these four kings are, that they are able to completely wipe out anyone who's in their path. But now, when we read the verses in Dvarim, it seems that what happened in Bereishit sets the stage for a divine plan that's going to be actualized hundreds of years later. Namely, when the Rifaim, Zuzim, Emim, Chori are all defeated in Bereishit, Lot still does not have any children. There is no Ammon and Moab. Esav does not exist. But somehow the defeat that happens in Bereishit is setting the stage for the eventual possession of the lands of those people by those future generations. Which therefore means that there may very well be a divine plan of history And as events happen, we can analyze those events from a human perspective. We can get all the political, military analysts. We can give you all of the explanations of why X defeated Y. And we can also tell you what seems to be the ramifications of those events. But that's looking at it from a very limited human perspective. In fact, there may be another dimension to it, which is the divine plane, where the events that are happening now may only be fully understood hundreds of years hence, when we can all of a sudden look back and say, what happened then set the stage for what's happening now in terms of different nations actualizing their destiny. So that if I come back to the book of Dvarim and our parsha, the first message which Moshe wants to give to the Jewish people is there is a divine plan of history. And it is important for the Jewish people to see the hand of God, not only in their history, but in world history. When the Jewish people see how Ammon, Moab, Edom were given their land by God, and because of that, the Jewish people have no license to take the land away from them, to engage them in any type of warfare. That lesson should then enable the Jewish people to appreciate the hand of God in their history, the destiny which they need to actualize, to realize how the stage has been set for them to now take possession of the land. As I mentioned earlier, Moshe is very much interested in empowering the Jewish people because it is very easy for people to become demoralized when the odds seem to be overwhelming, when you can't even begin to imagine where is this going. It takes that long historical perspective to be able to realize you can't measure things in terms of days, weeks, even years. But sometimes you can only appreciate processes after hundreds of years. If I now come back to the book, to the Parshav Dvarim and Tisha B'Av, the rabbis in Masechet Tanit say that five things happened on the day of Tisha B'Av. Five historical events, five historical tragedies. The first being the return of the spies and the crying of the Jewish people. And as the rabbis put it, on that night of Tisha B'Av, when the spies came back, you cried for no reason. You should have been excited. You should have seen that you have an opportunity presented to you and jumped to actualize your destiny. And instead of marching forward to actualize your future, instead of looking back at the past and being strengthened by your past to have a vision of the future, you allowed yourselves to be incapacitated by a narrow vision of the present. And because of that, the night of Tisha B'Av became a night of crying for all generations. Hence, according to rabbinic tradition, this is also the day when the first temple and the second temple were destroyed, when the city of Beitar fell, when Jerusalem was totally leveled in the post-Second Temple period. Tisha B'Av is a major fast day, a major fast day which is a time of introspection. It's a time not only to weep over all the tragedies which we have experienced for countless generations, but Tisha B'Av, according to rabbinic tradition, is also the day when the Messiah is born. It's a day when we also have to have a vision for the future. As in Parshat Dvarim, not only do we read, Echa Esa Levadi, how will I bear alone your toils and your quarrels, but we also read how God is with the Jewish people, how God is interested in having them take possession. The very last verse of the Parsha is, Lo tira'um, do not be afraid, ki Hashem Elokechem hu hanilcham lachem, because God is the one who fights for you. Tisha B'Av can be a time of tragedy. Tisha B'Av can also be a day of hope. It can be the beginning of a vision for the future. Israel is now in the midst of a very destructive battle against terrorists. Terrorists who undermine our very existence in this land, who do not acknowledge it, who refuse to acknowledge it, who refuse to accept that this is the land of our destiny, that this is our possession. And I think it's very important to emphasize, we're not talking about the greater land of Israel, the smaller land of Israel, we're talking about the concept that the Jewish people have a destiny to play in the land of Israel, have a history in the land of Israel, that the land of Israel is their possession. This is the battle that we are waging now. It is a frightening battle. It is frightening to see the loss of life. It is frightening to see the tremendous damage which is happening. But it is a battle that we have to fight and to fight with confidence. We can't just look at what will be today or tomorrow, but we have to see back into our past and have the vision of the future. May we be able to be sustained by that last verse in the parsha, to not be afraid, to not be intimidated, to have the faith that yes, God is fighting with us, and that God is interested in having us maintain possession of this land of our destiny. And may I just add one last note. Moshe says, "Woe, how can I bear your toils, your troubles, your quarrels?" Tragedies have always come upon the Jewish people when we are divided, when we are polarized, when we quarrel. Our strength is to be found in our unity. Our strength is to be found in our ability to really care. It is unfortunate that in Israel, during times of war, the best seems to come out in the population. Right now, there is unbelievable outpouring of help and goodwill that's being shown to the people in the north by everyone else across the country, in terms of taking people into their homes, in terms of trying to help them out financially. In the merit of our unity, May we overcome this difficult situation, come out a strengthened people, and be able to actualize a most basic yearning which we have, which is to be able to live in peace. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Our listenership continues to grow through your help. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.